Welcome to SCI Science Perspectives, a podcast brought to you by the American Spinal Injury Association. In this podcast, we'll be discussing emerging literature spanning the full spectrum of SCI research, from discovery to clinical application. You're listening to a Scholarly Perspectives episode with Dr. Stephen Burns. I'm your host, Marla.
And I'm David. Today, we will be discussing a paper titled Development and Validation of an Algorithm for Item Reduction of the International Standards for the Neurological Classification of Spinal Cord Injury, Examination to Determine Level and Severity of SCI, which was recently accepted for publication in the journal Topics in Spinal Cord Injury Rehabilitation, and we hear will go out in August. This paper was suggested to us by Asia's International Standards Committee, and our guest today is Dr. Stephen Burns. Dr. Burns is a physiatrist who serves as the director of the SCI service at VA Puget Sound and is professor in the Department of Rehabilitation Medicine at the University of Washington School of Medicine in Seattle. He is a member and past chair of Asia's International Standards Committee, and he participated in the development of the SCI patient registry currently used by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Quickly, before we have Dr. Burns come on, we'll just point out that this E-INSCI version 2 protocol published in this paper is available in a more friendly format on the website intended for end users. So go ahead and check that out. Expedited INSCI exam is the webpage on Asia's website. Dr. Burns, welcome to the podcast again.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be able to discuss this recent work by the International Standards Committee.
Yeah, very exciting. So these numbers will look familiar to you, to some of our listeners, they will as well, but 56 dermatomes, 20 muscles, 2 anal rectal, that is 134 exam items that make up the full INSCI. Two parts of that stand out to us. One is some of those categories have a lot of numbers, 56 dermatomes, and in others, there's not that many items, but they stand out like anal rectal. So from the big picture here, can you zoom us into the priorities here and how you got to the point of wanting to either omit item numbers or omit a specific item number? So were you trying to reduce the total number of items, or was there a specific item you were trying to remove?
Sure. Yeah, great question. So this has been the chronic criticism of the full INSCI was that it can take so long to perform, especially for novice examiners. What we always knew but became obvious as algorithms were developed was that a lot of the exam doesn't contribute to the classification, particularly the sensory portion of the exam. Essentially, doing a full INSCI, once the sensory levels have been determined, nothing really matters for the main classifications of NLI, neurologic level of injury, and the Asia impairment scale until you get down to S4-5 testing. So that was seen as a great target for reducing items. With the version one, there really were some options for skipping some of the motor, depending on how you went through things. But in deciding how much we wanted to shorten things this time, we felt that we had a great balance on a huge reduction of sensory, whereas the motor typically is the most important part of the exam. The specifics of what the muscle strength is will be determining somebody's functional expectations. And for most clinicians, that's a fairly quick part to do. So in the end, the subcommittee working on this decided let's retain all of the motor. It also gives us the advantage of being able to calculate motor scores. So in addition to the NLI and the AIS, we also will always be able to determine scores. On the anal rectal exam, so this is going to be a sort of an ongoing source of frustration. It was seen as wonderful in version one that we had an option for skipping the anal rectal exam on most patients. We said as long as the neurologic level of injury was T10 or Rostral, that you could use this option and just substitute the S1 finding. So readily accessible muscles, skin, you don't have to do a digital rectal exam, wonderful. But it turned out with the analyses that we did that are in this publication, using that substitution didn't turn out to be as accurate as we were hoping it was going to be. And that was determined on a large number of cases, over 7,000 cases in the Rick Canson spinal cord injury database. And overall accuracy was so-so, it was 90%. But what was distressing to us was that for patients who truly were AISB, that was AIS was correctly classified only 55% of the time, so not much better than 50-50. As I'm sure listeners know, patients with initial AISB have a very variable prognosis where about half the patients will convert to AISC or D in the first couple of months. So a huge amount of recovery and prognosis is variable. So to incorrectly classify those patients, and most of the incorrects were mistaking them for A's, where the prognosis is not so great. This was seen as a big error. And so for version two, we decided we are not going to include that substitution option. We had hoped that the errors were going to be confined just to patients with low neurological levels, but it turned out at cervical levels, it was relatively common. And as we got to very low levels, it was accurate. So we couldn't just use a single cutoff. So that's going to be a source of frustration because it is a big deal to clinicians to have to do that. It is a big deal for some patients. However, about half of cases, we can skip the anorectal exam because it doesn't contribute to the classification at all in most of the C's and D's. So it still can be omitted about half the time, but it can't be omitted for the other half.
Can you talk a little bit about the initial impetus to relook at this expedited INSCI exam? You discuss in the paper there's some feedback from the community about this version of the exam. Now, why did the committee decide to relook at the data now, 5 years after the initial protocol?
Sure. So we presented the version one in 2018 and 2019 after having worked on it for a year or two, and got feedback, and we had some preliminary analyses. So we put it up on the Asia website in February of 2020, right as kind of the whole world was shutting down. So kind of interrupted our initial feedback, but eventually we got it from the field. And part of it was that the instructions for the version one protocol were really kind of vague. We had video case examples that showed pretty well our thoughts for what the steps would be in, say, doing a shortened sensory exam. But it wasn't really step-by-step and precise in the written instructions. The instructions could have you going back and forth from sensory to motor, back to sensory, and then some additional motor in the interest of shortening the exam. But it's not a logical order for clinicians to be jumping back and forth like that. And then as I was presenting this in some small settings, finally getting back to face-to-face presentations, again, it was lots of questions about exactly how much sensory needs to be included. And so just validating that we were not very precise with our version one. So the manuscript was, my assignment from International Standards Committee and Asia of get a publication out there describing this. It's been a few years, and where is it? So the initial plan was to just describe version one and describe version one's accuracy. And in the process of doing that, we came across that what we were recommending in version one wasn't as accurate as we had hoped it would be. Because the instructions weren't very precise, we had to develop precise instructions. So by the time we had something together, it really was a new version of it. But this time, validated with what the accuracy is, and in part what I mentioned earlier of the 7,000 Rick Hansen cases, full exams that we analyzed, automated analysis of the accuracy of the AIS. But for the second part of this, we went through the specific instructions on full exams. These were exams from the ENSCE database. And each case was examined through twice. What if we apply these rules? Exactly what do we get for the classification? How many exact steps exactly did it take? In that process, that's when we realized that we were not initially very accurate for what the NLI would be. So we tried different versions of this, the different order for the testing, and that's eventually where we came up with this version of doing motor first, doing full motor, and then doing the sensory based off what we found on the motor exam. And when it all came together, we had this, you know, what we thought was excellent accuracy, 98% accurate for identifying the NLI and 100% accurate for the AIS, with this 31% of only 31% of the exam required, and a rectal exam omitted about half the time. So the committee felt this is an acceptable balance between exam shortening and accuracy. And for many times when an exam is needed and we just need classifications of NLI and AIS, this would be a sufficient exam. But it's not the ideal exam for all situations.
One of the new terms or abbreviations that came out of this is the development of this ENSCE item reduction algorithm, or the IIRI, that is mentioned in this paper. Can you talk a little bit about the development of that, how the expert panel came to the conclusions that were presented in the paper based on the algorithm?
Sure. So a potential source of confusion, and the words we're using here are algorithm versus protocol. So algorithm is referring to what is in this research publication that's showing if you do the exam in this sequence, these specific steps, this is the accuracy of it, and this is how many steps are required. So validating that this approach to full exams will get you that accuracy with that few steps. The protocol is what we have posted on the ASIA website. So there are additional instructions, like the subject, the patient, has to be in a supine position when the motor testing is performed. The protocol document has suggested uses for full exam versus expedited exam, and just more instructions in that document, which is not a long document at all. The whole thing is three pages printed. What's on the ASIA website. So consider that the publication is the validation showing that if you follow these steps, this is the accuracy. But I wouldn't want people just looking at the manuscript as the guidance for how do I do this. That's really what the protocol document does. And we're hoping that the abbreviation that we used in the manuscript, just to be saving words, this ENSCE item reduction algorithm, we're not planning to introduce that term into common use. That the algorithm was the basis for ENSCE version 2. So I'm only referring to ENSCE version 2. And I hope the abbreviation, the IIRA, ENSCE item reduction algorithm, doesn't sort of be what people are referring to. That's the steps that we use within the ENSCE version 2 that give us this huge exam item reduction and high accuracy for NLI and AIS.
Yeah, that's great. And as we look at the IIRA, as the methods employed in the paper, to determine the V2 accuracy. That was possible because of databases. So can you say a little bit about the importance of these databases, the European Multi-Study About Spinal Cord Injury, or EMSCI, and Rick Hansen's Spinal Cord Injury Registry databases, and how they enabled this study?
Sure. So, these are, two of, many national and international SCI databases, which, for the last, decade or more, have been recording full neurologic exams. There was a point in time where the U.S. SCI Model Systems database wasn't including the full exam, but it is included there. It was because of our the collaborators on the subcommittee that created the ENSCI version 2 that we decided to use the Rick Hansen Spinal Cord Registry and the EMSCI because we had ready access to that. We thought it was good to use both just for sort of diversity of what was being used for the analysis, and just happened to be that the large automated analysis we did with the Rick Hansen data and the step-by-step going through the instructions we did with EMSCI. Interesting to me that it was easiest for the EMSCI ones to output them onto a worksheet in German. So I got to learn some of the German words for the muscles, seeing that. But we considered these cases were representative. The large number from the Rick Hansen, on average, these were exam, or the median, I guess it was 10 days out from injury. So these are acute exams. It's possible the results would be different in a population with chronic injuries. These were exclusively traumatic in one and predominantly traumatic in the other, because EMSCI does include patients with sort of acute vascular, but otherwise doesn't have any non-traumatic patients. So potentially this could be validated with other populations, chronic injuries, non-traumatic injuries. I suspect the accuracy would be very similar, and without any sort of strong indication of otherwise. I'm just going with that as the assumption.
Yeah, that's great. And just a quick follow-on for our research audience. I can think of a number of North American, even specifically American Model System Centers, North American Clinical Trials Network includes U.S. and Canada. Do you imagine that even though this paper has been published, this is great, let's go on with the ENSCI V2, where you could do kind of a retrograde analysis on those databases to see if there are geographic or regional differences?
You're asking as far as whether the accuracy would be similar?
Yeah, or if there's any desire to plug in the IIRA to other databases and see.
Yeah, I think it probably would be most interesting to look at it in a population that included chronic injuries and non-traumatics, just to round out the other populations that the ENSCI, full ENSCI is widely used in. I know within VA, where I practice, where we most of the population we treat has chronic injuries, and about half of them have non-traumatics. We switched over to using the ENSCI version 1 in 2020, and really noted no problems or concerns about the reliability or feasibility of doing it in that population. And the fact that we're focusing on the motor exam and always doing the motor exam is reassuring. We do, with the sensory that we're not performing, we could potentially be missing changes. Someone with a progressive condition, however, we get most concerned about that if there are motor changes going on, and the fact that we're including full motor all the time means that we'll have that as something to look at and monitor.
So you discuss kind of at the end of the paper next steps for implementation, training. How does the committee envision like fully launching this version of the expedited InSki to the community?
Sure. So the first time around, we wanted to make sure that we had a solid product before we developed expensive educational resources, like full online training. We will probably wait a bit before developing it to make sure that there's not some suggested change from the field that that improves things. I think we ought to teach this for at least a year or so, as far as discovering what are the simplest ways to be explaining things to someone who's new at this, but before going with the more involved online learning creation. So at this point, there are 4 case videos that are posted on the Asia website that are just me doing a voiceover showing the sequence of first you would test this and this, and based on what you see, you would do this next. So we'll probably create a few more of those as cases come up from the questions come up from the field of what do I do in this situation. We'll be including some educational lectures at professional meetings, trying to disseminate this to the field. And I would expect that in the sort of dedicated teaching courses that we'll begin to be including this in the next year or so. But yeah, we are very open to receiving feedback and questions, because this is only, at this point in time, has been presented to audiences five or six times, and was really just released to the field at the beginning of June 2025 at the Asia conference.
Well, Dr. Burns, we're happy to be part of that dissemination effort. And for our listeners, if they do want to provide any feedback, how can they do so?
So there is contact information listed on the Asia website. And those questions usually route initially to Dr. Rupp. And if it's an eInSki question, he's probably going to send it to me. So any questions related to eInSki classification, it's a great mechanism for the committee to know what is confusing and what is problematic, and to focus in on those specific questions.
There you have it, dear listener. If you engage with this resource, as you engage with this resource, and have any feedback or questions, send them our way. So, Dr. Burns, just in wrapping up this episode here, we want to hand you the mic one more time so that you can make a very clear distinction between what was done in the paper and what's on the website. So for our clinicians and practitioners, if they're listening and they just want to go and use the eInSki version 2, how can they do so?
So, yeah, go to the Asia website or Google Asia eInSki, and it will take you right to the page that has the protocol. I just want to mention within the protocol, on the first page of the protocol, what everyone should look at is a table with suggested uses for when the full InSki would be appropriate versus when an eInSki may be appropriate. And we suspect there'll be some disagreement, but overall agreement from clinicians and researchers. There are certain time points, admission to inpatient rehabilitation, if a patient is having neurologic loss. We really want to perform a full exam at those time points, establish all of the classifications, know exactly what the status is in each of the dermatomes and myotomes. The suggested uses for eInSki version 2, so a quick screening exam for early determination of NLI and AIS, say immediately when a patient rolls in, if a decision has to be made faster than a full exam can be performed, possibly in potential determining eligibility for a clinical trial. We think this is a reasonable exam to do if you want to be periodically monitoring changes in someone that's had a recent injury to make sure they're stable or that they're having the expected improvements that we often see after SCI, and that this would be an appropriate exam for a patient who's being seen for routine follow-up, say annual evaluations, who doesn't have any symptoms of sensory or motor loss or any functional decline, that this would be a reasonable screening. But if one of those conditions was present, then a full exam would be recommended.
Thanks so much, Dr. Burns, and we're very lucky to have the ENSCA expert on with us. So we really appreciate your time. And yeah, everybody feel free to check out that website. We'll link it in the show notes as well.
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCI Science Perspectives, brought to you by the American Spinal Injury Association. The paper discussed in this episode was chosen based on the recommendation of Asia's International Standards Committee. The podcast was created under the leadership of Dr. Suzanne Groh and is sustained by your producer hosts, David McMillan, Marla Petrello, Faria Khalik, Trevor Dyson Hudson, and our editor, Abby Fox, along with Asia's front office. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, please contact us at sciperspectivespodcast@gmail.com.